Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. Hello everyone! As certain as spring will be coming back soon for our Northern Hemisphere listeners, hopefully, here we're back with episode 23 of the ITS Podcast, the world-class podcast on intelligent transportation science and engineering. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. We have just prepared a new episode for our very special community. We have a very interesting interview with Philippe Bonifet, professor in robotics and automation at the University of Technology of Compiègne, and head of the research group Automotion Embedded Systems and Robotics in France. We talked about driving sim understanding and a recent publication of this group in Italian Transportation Systems magazine. Mehran Shirazi has prepared a transportation history mini section about a remarkable engineer lady named Mary Walton, who fought against air and acoustic pollution more than 130 years ago in New York City. Finally, we also have a news mini section by Dr. Marian Kavishkar about some autonomous driving and fascinating news coming from Nissan, yet another car maker committed to put autonomous vehicles in the market. So this is our today's menu. I'm sure you'll like it. Just relax in your warmest armchair and enjoy.
This is the news mini section for episode 23, March 2015, by Mariam Kavishkar. It was not long ago, in August 2013, Irvine, California, that Nissan announced that the company will be ready with multiple commercially viable autonomous drive vehicles by 2020. Same year in October, Nissan won the top award for the autonomous drive technology at CeTech Japan. Soon after, a Nissan Leaf electric vehicle outfitted with the advanced autonomous drive technology was the first to be tested on a public road. It was taken out on an expressway southwest of Tokyo. Nissan Vice Chairman Toshio Kishida went along for the ride. Earlier this month, the same car had given a ride to Japanese Prime Minister in the streets of Tokyo. The zero-emission vehicle with laser scanners, around-view monitor cameras, and advanced artificial intelligence and actuators has approached the expressway with a speed of 40 km per hour and has driven on the expressway with a speed of 80. Nissan's autonomous driving technology is an extension of its safety shield, which monitors a 360-degree view around the vehicle for risks, offers warning to the driver, and takes action if necessary. It is based on the philosophy that everything required should be on board, rather than relying on detailed external data. However, it can also be integrated with a standard in-car navigation system. The car safely enters and exits the highway, sticks to the lane, or if it's needed, takes over slower cars and changes the lane, avoiding collision without a map. For this, the vehicle's systems recognize road lanes, surrounding traffic, and traffic signs and signals with sight distance control on highway environments. In contrast, to achieve autonomous driving on the urban roads, the system must negotiate a wider variety of road environments, the stop line, oncoming and turning vehicles, and parked vehicles on road shoulders. This kind of convenience for the driver could ultimately lead to a significant reduction in accidents caused by human error and inattention. Looking forward to the future.
Transportation in History by Mehran Shirazi, PhD candidate at Simon Fraser University, Canada. The main shortcoming of the Industrial Revolution has always been the pollution. The fight against transportation-derived pollution is not new. Actually, it has started shortly after US Civil War. Back in the 19th century, there was an engineer lady named Mary Walton who developed two patterns to fight two sorts of pollution, air pollution and acoustic pollution. In 1879, she developed a system to capture pollutants in smoke which was pouring into the air via chimneys of the factories. Her system deflected the emissions into water tanks. That dirty water was then flushed into the city's sewage system. Her invention was then successfully adopted to locomotives. At the end of that century, there was another very annoying side effect of the Industrial Revolution in the United States. Elevated trains produced a harmful amount of noise. Some sociologists even correlated to nervous breakdowns and neuroses that many citizens suffered in the large cities. Living in Manhattan City, Mary Walton patented a second invention in 1891 to reduce noise pollution produced by elevated railroads in New York. It consisted of wooden boxes painted with tar, lined with cotton, and filled with sand. Those devices absorbed a good amount of the vibrations coming from the rails. Once the effectiveness of her system was proved, she sold the patent to the city's Metropolitan Railroad. She was hailed as a hero. Before Mary, many inventors had tried to solve the pollution issue. But in the age when men did most of the inventing, this woman's brain did the work and made a difference.
Hi again. Here comes our today's interview. I believe it's really informative. Enjoy it. Hello, we're today with Philippe Bonifay, professor in robotics and automation at the University of Technology of Compiègne, north to Paris, French, and head of the research group Automation, Embedded Systems and Robotics. Hello, Professor Bonifay. Can you please introduce yourself and your research group to our listeners?
Okay. Hello to everybody. Yes, thank you very much for your invitation to attend this this podcast. I am a professor in robotics and automation at UTC, the University of Technology of Compiègne, and I'm also involved in a mixed research unit in between UTC and the CNRS, the Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique, in France. So we are working in intelligent vehicles and for ADAS application mainly, but we are more and more interested in autonomous vehicles. And this activity started, in fact, in 1991 during the Prometheus, the European project called Prometheus. And since then, we have regular collaboration with national and European laboratories, and we have also several testbed vehicles to demonstrate and to evaluate our algorithms. So we are working in different topic in the field of different topics in the field of robotics and intelligent vehicles. So, for instance, we are working on perception in dynamic and outdoor environments, on precise dynamic localization with integrity monitoring. We do some data fusion and state observation, and also we are working on inter-vehicle communication and highly dynamic ad hoc networks. Mm-hmm. And for that, we also have a prototyping architecture that enable us to do real experiments. So that's it.
That's great. Thank you. We're also with Marek Kurde. Hello, Marek. Can you please introduce yourself as well?
Hello, everyone. Hello, Javier. And thank you very much for the invitation to this podcast. Currently, I'm on the very end of my PhD. I've been preparing my thesis in the ADASIC laboratory at UTC. What I've studied in my PhD is the interest in the exploiting digital maps in autonomous vehicles, notably for environment perception. I've worked on methods to include map data in such systems in order to get additional knowledge about the vehicle's environment and so to improve the overall performance of the perception system. And yes, I'm going to defend my PhD next January, so it will be the culmination of 3 years of work.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Well, Professor Bonifay and Mr. Kurde have recently published a very interesting paper at the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems magazine titled Map-Aided Evidential Grids for Driving Scene Understanding. Well, congratulations on that. The truth is that such paper is quite loaded with interesting innovative concepts. For starters, Philip, what are evidential grids, and how are they useful for mobile object perception, such an instrumental research field for intelligent transportation systems?
Okay, yes. Thank you for this question, because it's very important to explain this. First, what we are dealing with 2D grids, and so it's a very common framework to do environment perception. So a grid is a discretization of the space into cells that can be typically occupied or free. And this allows to perform objects detection and drivable space characterization. So what's interesting with grids is that they do not rely on features. And so there is no hypothesis on the shape of the environment. Okay, so this is the first key point. Moreover, so grids are elaborated from LIDAR scans. For instance, it can be other sensors, but it's typically based on LIDAR scans. But as some LIDARs provide very sparse information, for instance, the one used in this paper has only 4 layers, and it's installed close to the ground in the front bumper of the car. So in this case, the information that we get is very partial, so we need to accumulate the information on the grid to get an enhanced perception of the environment. So for this, the grid framework, it's a very interesting tool. Now the issue is to handle measurements error and occultation, you know, masks due to objects, and to provide confidence information on the occupancy of every cell of the grid. So what I've just said is typically an evidential grid, and it's very common to a very common framework in perception. But in this research, we are working on what we call evidential grids that manipulate beliefs instead of probabilities. And we do that using the Dempster-Shafer belief function theory. And in this paper, thanks to this framework, to these evidential frameworks, the grids can have more classes than just the classical free occupied states, and so we can label objects, for instance, with additional information. That could be, we will come back on this later on the discussion. For instance, we can label an object by giving it the information, this is an object moving on the road. And this is possible to do thanks to our evidential framework.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Well, Marek, in your paper, you all talk about enhancing perception by doing data fusion of LiDAR and your reference, as Philip mentioned. Can you explain what are the magic spells you used to fuse that quite different information sources into a reliable dynamic scene reconstruction?
Well, first of all, we are not doing any sorcery, so there are not many magic spells out there. But when dealing with data originating from such different sources, so maps, LIDARs, possibly other sensors, one has to find a way to represent all this information so that we can process it easily in further steps of data fusion. So evidential grids, just as occupancy grids and what Philip has already mentioned, have precisely this advantage. They are capable of representing heterogeneous sensors and map information in a homogeneous manner. Moreover, sensors in use can vary. One can use a LiDAR as we did, one can use a camera, but also a radar or sonar and so on. Actually, the only requirement is to be able to define an inverse sensor model, or in other words, one has to translate the sensor data into a grid. And for the sensor I've just mentioned, there are a couple of research works that define such models. So you have already used that. We use maps in the same manner as other sensors. That is what we call a virtual sensors. One has to know that maps are often used to condition some sensor information, but such approaches cannot take into account the errors that these maps include potentially. And in our method, it exploits the complementary information from maps to refine the LiDAR data, which are obviously semantically poor. For instance, we give in the paper an example of pedestrians, one crossing a road, another one stopped on the road, and the last one stopped on the sidewalk. So initially, the LiDAR alone is unable to provide an elaborated scene understanding information. After a few iterations of our algorithm, we are able to say that one pedestrian is moving on the road, another one is stopped on the road, and the third one is stopped on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And the last magic incantation that I would like to talk about is the conflict management. Obviously, the data coming from various sensors may differ, so they have conflictual information. The reasons are diverse, limited precision, limited accuracy, some incompleteness of the data, or the obsoleteness of this data, and so on and so forth. So one has to deal with this conflict information that arises between the sensors. And what we do is to distinguish two types of conflict, and we use this knowledge to detect more rapidly mobile objects. And so these two types of conflicts represent two types of movements of an object, or rather an appearance of an object in a grid or in a cell, and its disappearance. It's like our grid was free and becomes occupied, and the second conflict is our grid was occupied and it gets free, and we can deduce some supplementary information about this object.
Philip, what do you think sensor fishing is becoming more and more frequent in intelligent transportation developments?
Yes, I really believe that it is an important issue. And you know, this is an old problem with many research results. We know that with only one sensor or several sensors of the same technology, it's very difficult to get the necessary information for autonomous vehicles or ADAS systems. Vehicles evolve in complex and open environments that can be very different from one day to another, for instance, during night or daytime. So one can imagine to have plenty of sensors dedicated to specific functions, but the cost would be very high, and it would be very difficult to install all these sensors on the vehicle. So, for these reasons, multi-sensor fusion is useful and provides a way to exploit different sensors for different functions. Nowadays, we have two new technologies, one being wireless communication in between vehicles and the infrastructure, and the other one is the maps. And as you probably know, we have more and more maps of the environments, and this is really a key technology for intelligent vehicles. So I believe really that we have to work on methods that can exploit this prior knowledge of a map to enhance the data fusion process. So this is typically a contribution of our IITS magazine paper to this problem of using a prior map in the perception system.
Thank you, that's interesting. Well, Mark, again, talking about those maps, can you use any map? How accurate do you need it to be in your development? Do you have to create it yourselves?
Well, for our method, any georeferenced map that contains geometric description of road surface and building models in two or three dimensions, it may be used. So it's not every map, but a great majority of maps that are currently available are okay for our use. And our maps have to be accurate, but we don't ask them to be complete. Of course, the more complete the map, the better. Mm-hmm. The maps that we use currently are not created by ourselves, and that's what we want to avoid, actually. For instance, we have tested our methods with two different maps. At first, we employed a very accurate 3D map from IGN, that is the French National Institute of Geographic and Forest Information, the map that was prepared on purpose for a collaborative CTV project. And second, we gave a try to OpenStreetMap. This project, widely known currently, dates back to 2004 and aims to offer free maps editable by everyone and available to everyone. And these maps are less accurate than those that from IGN, but still accurate enough for our use. They contain, however, only two-dimensional information. Our use is limited to building models, since the road surface is not modeled. There is only the road graph, which is represented as polylines.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Philip, let me place a more theoretical question now. You mentioned that you use the Dempster-Shaffer theory as a basis for the mobile perception you perform. Can you give us the essence of such theory and how was it useful for your research?
Yes, we started to work on evidential grids for 5 years ago now. We can say that Dempster theory, it's a generalization of Bayesian theory. It is able to attribute masses of beliefs to union of hypotheses without putting arbitrary a priori information between the hypotheses. And this is very important when the dynamic of the dynamics of the driving scene is highly dynamic. An important concept in the Dempster-Shaffer framework is that data fusion is clearly separated from the decision stage. Usually the data fusion level is called cradle, the cradle level, in which information is manipulated and handled and merged, for instance. And in particular, for instance, it is possible to explicitly manipulate the unknown, which means we don't have any information. Mm-hmm. On the other side, at the end, there are different decision rules being more or less pessimistic or optimistic. A well-known decision strategy is called the pygmistic decision rule that transforms beliefs into probabilities. And this is the one we use in this paper. But the main drawback of the Dempster-Shaffer framework is its computational complexity, which is exponential with the size of the frame of discernment. But experiments that we have carried out recently show that computation can be done in real time with a 40 times 40 meter squared grid and a cell size of 10 centimeters. So it's quite a refined perception grid. And we have shown that we are able to process the evidential grid framework up to 20 Hertz. So it means that really evidential grids are tractable. And for instance, if we use a basic occupied free frame of discernment, which is very usual in occupancy grids, the grid can be simply manipulated as a color image with four layers. We use four layers because in our processing, one layer is dedicated for the conflict management that is very useful for mobile object detection.
Uh-huh. Excellent. We now need to make a very short break. Stay tuned. We'll be back in no time. Hi there. We are running a new contest to celebrate the second anniversary of the ITS podcast next May 2015. The follower that can get the largest amount of new followers to subscribe the ITS podcast email list will win an iPad to better enjoy our contents. How to contend? Well, you have to provide us with a list of the email addresses of the new followers attracted and the approximate date of their subscription. To be eligible, you have to attract at least 30 new subscribers. So, first step. Go and find as many potential ITS podcast followers as you can. Second step, send them the email list subscription link you can find at itsp.cicei.com, inviting them to subscribe. Very important note, when they use that link to intro their email addresses, they will have to confirm their intention to join our distribution list through a confirmation email they will receive in their inboxes. Unverified emails will not be counted as valid. Third and final step. When you know they have subscribed, send the email addresses and subscription date list to itsspodcast@gmail.com. itsspodcast@gmail.com. So please go and help us. You can win an iPad. Now let's get back to our today's interview. We're back again with Professor Philippe Bonifay and Mr. Marek Kurdej. Marek, from the title of your paper, you're aiming at driving, seeing, understanding. Can you please explain about that? It seems quite challenging since apparently it includes understanding human drivers.
Well, the driving, seeing, understanding is about two things: labeling objects and being able to predict their state. In our case, we try to have the most detailed representation possible of vehicle's environment, which is the labeling part. We therefore distinguish between drivable and non-drivable free space, between moving and stopped obstacles, and also we detect the urban infrastructure. For the prediction, it's only static, let's say. It doesn't contain the prediction of obstacle movement, its speed or acceleration, I mean. And when it comes to the understanding of human drivers, it's indeed clear that autonomous vehicles need to understand and anticipate the behavior of humans. The technology will not be mature if it cannot handle the current traffic condition, and as far as we can see, a human driver will be here to stay for a moment. Anyway, let us come back to the topic. In our method, we do not model the human behavior explicitly, but we model the actual behavior of objects, which is provoked by the human drivers.
Uh-huh. Philippe, about autonomous vehicles, you have some interesting examples in some other French strong groups working on that field. I think driving, seeing, understanding may be a very different problem to solve if we have all manned vehicles, all autonomous vehicles, or a mix of them. So, Professor, what is the scenario you currently consider for your research and why?
Yes, you know, the introduction of intelligent vehicle technologies will be progressive. So I really think that we have to handle scenarios with manned vehicles and autonomous vehicles and semi-autonomous vehicles. And so we have, from this point of view, when we do scene understanding, we don't limit ourselves to particular scenarios. What we try to do is we focus on, for instance, on urban driving scenes or on motorway driving scenes, depending really on what will be the ADAS function or the autonomous driving mode.
You know, this is quite a traditional question in this podcast series. Philip, as a researcher, do you believe in a future completely autonomous private mobility?
Okay, yes.
Yes?
Yes, one day. But not in the near future. I really believe that. In fact, we are facing, from my point of view, three main issues. One, as I said before, it's the environment complexity and variability. This is one point. Secondly, we are facing legislative issues. And in Europe, for instance, and in many countries, you know, the driver is still responsible of the control of the vehicle, and so this is really an important point also. And thirdly, we are using software that relies on artificial intelligence and artificial algorithm, and currently, to the best of my knowledge, there is no way to do the validation of the software. And from the dependability point of view, this problem is still open. So for these three main reasons, I really believe that the autonomous vehicles will be always under the, let's say, the responsibility and sometimes the supervision of the driver that has to be able, for instance, to take over the control of the car when the system is not able to do the control by itself. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that the way we drive currently will change a lot in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Let's listen what the younger generation has to say about that. Marit, do you concur?
Well, I wouldn't be here and I wouldn't have started my PhD if I didn't believe in that. I really think that autonomous vehicles will drive on our roads one day. And I hope it happens before I get too old, actually.
Good.
I'm looking forward to being a passenger of an intelligent car. This technology, in my opinion, will contribute to a diminution of the traffic-related death rate, to contribute to lower environment impact of transportation system, and it will have, in my opinion, a lot of advantages.
Good.
Such vehicles will also improve our comfort on the road, essentially for commuters traveling long distances, but also of anybody like me that gets bored or tired behind the steering wheel. And as Philip has already mentioned, there are still many problems, technological, legal, but also social. I mean, you have to change people's mind to get used to using and seeing intelligent vehicles without driver. I think for some people it can be just a nightmare to be out there with computers steering the cars. These are the problems that have to be solved before the advent of intelligent cars in our garages. And there's a whole lot of amazing research subject to work on.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, that's it. Thank you very much. This is our first interview to a France-based research group, so I'm positive that our European folks will be delighted, as much as our regular followers. So this is good stuff. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And thank you, everyone.
Okay, so goodbye to everybody, and I wish to have discussion and exchange with some of you during our next ITS conferences. So goodbye and au revoir, as we say in French.
Au revoir, thank you. Okay, let's get back to our daily routines. We are already cooking episode 24 with the best ingredients, all for our dear listeners. Please send us comments, improvement ideas, criticism, anything. We are all ears. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Italian Transportation Systems Society, website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of La Palma de Gran Canaria in Spain, soundtrack developed by Rubicon, language advisory by Manuel Arbelo and Professor Sean Williams from Clemson University, South Carolina. We'll be back soon bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening, and drive safe.